We built this city on rock and roll. Built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. But my girl wants to party all the time. Party all the time. Party all the time.
Queremos.
Hello there, my name is Aaron Moss, and this is the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour, presented by Head Speaks. This is an hour-long podcast where we'll talk about the Will Payton Starman comic and the Mark Shaw Manhunter comic from the late 80s, early 90s. We'll talk about every appearance of these two great characters. If you've never read them or haven't read them in a while, this may be a good time to explore these issues. Now, let's get started with our first comic.
First up on the agenda is Manhunter number 19, the second part of our Saint and Sinner storyline. Cover date was November of 1989, but to buy this on sale, you had to be around September the 12th of 1989. Cover price was $1. The title of this issue was called Shadow Warrior. Plotted by John Ostrander. Scripted by Kim Yale, penciler Grant Meehan, inker John Statham, letterer Gaspar Saladino, colorist Carl Gadford, and the cover was done by Grant Meehan, and this book was edited by Jonathan Peterson. And the synopsis, and again, the information I just gave, the credits, and the synopsis came from Mike's Amazing World of Comics. The synopsis for this issue, a new Dumas has killed Eli Hasangoa and taken control of the clan. He takes the Shaw family as prisoners and sends Kazuo Hasawaga to New York to deliver a message to Mark Shaw. Manhunter then goes to Tokyo to fight Dumas. While Mark works to free his family, Kazuo puts on the Manhunter costume and fights Dumas, where he is fatally wounded. Now, as usual, my thoughts on this issue. As usual, we'll start with the cover. The cover starts with our Manhunter logo. It's got our trade dress on the side. This is Saints and Sinners, Part 2 of 6. In the middle, we get a picture of Dumas holding up an idol of some sort. In the background, we see a Japanese guy holding, looks like Manhunter with his mask off. His head's tilted back like he's dead or dying. And in the background, we get a building that's on fire, smoke explosion looks like, things flying up in the air. Overall, it's a great cover. Again, I like these Manhunter covers. It's very dynamic. It tells a story. It tells you how Dumas has fought Manhunter. Apparently has won. While there's a building burning in the background. Overall, I think it's a great cover. It tells a story, and it's very well drawn. Moving on to the story itself. The first page, while not part of the story, it's just the cover sheet, if you will. It says Shadow Warrior. We get a Japanese logo with, I'm assuming it's supposed to be blood running down there in front of it, dripping onto the Manhunter mask, which is on a casket. I've already recapped what's going to happen in this issue, so it's no surprise, but this kind of foretells what's going to happen here, that we get a death this issue and Manhunter's involved. In fact, this kind of lays it out that maybe it is Manhunter. But since I've already recapped it, we know it's not. We can continue on. But if this is the first time reading this, between the cover and this first page, you might wonder what's going on here. Are they killing off Mark? The only reason you would be, and I think you would hesitate. And again, I can't remember off. Oh, you know what? I'm re-looking, and sometimes I'm a bit of an idiot. They're on the cover. That's the Manhunter's mask he's holding. I didn't recognize it at first because his fingers are in the eye holes and the top of the mask. But looking at, yeah, that's the Manhunter mask he's got in his hand. It's not some idol. I'm an idiot. So Dumas is on the cover holding Manhunter's mask. And as I was saying, between that and Manhunter in quotes in the background line, look like he's dead, and this cover page, you might think Mark dies this issue, but seeing how this is part 2 of 6 of a Manhunter book, probably not. Moving on to the story itself, again, the artwork in this book, I don't know if I should comment on it. Same thing as always. For the most part, there may be some pictures here that I don't like, but overall, it's a great book. It's a great title. It's a great art. That's what I'm looking for. Again, I'm not an artist like the yard sale artist, but I do know what I like, and this is very, again, this isn't very four-color-y. Like, I like most of my superhero books, but I do like the occasional darker, not necessarily gloomier, but the darker, not quite as color-popping when the mood fits and the book fits. And I think Manhunter is very much that book. And again, we get, as we talked about here, we picked up where we had the last issue, Mark's family in front of Dumas, and again, I'm terrible at names, but it's, what's his name? Kazul picks up a weapon and runs at Dumas. He gets knocked down, and Dumas is about ready to kill Kazul when this guy, what's his name, Ryu, comes in and tells him that, you know, don't kill him yet, listen to me. And basically, Dumas decides to use Ryu as a go-between between him and Mark. But before he sends him out, he says that he has to have, he demands a tribute that, the defense of Kazul trying to assassinate him. He demands payment for that. Not necessarily payment, but vengeance for it. And so he says he demands, what's it called? Yubi Sumi? And apparently it's where they cut off a finger or something, because they grab his hand and he takes the sword, and then we cut away before we see anything. And again, I like this here on page 8. We get Mark, a picture of Mark Shaw, aka Manhunter, above the city. He's got a baton in hand. He's in shadows. It's just a great image. He's got the one big panel, and then there's a panel above it, a panel inset, and then four panels inset below it. And Mark's at home, thinking his family's safe in Japan. Little does he know, he's delivered his family into the hands of his enemy. And Kazul shows up, and Mark's like, appreciate the irony, Dumas, wearing Kazul's face. Kazul's like, my face is my own. Test me if you wish. And Kazul's got one of his hands in his pocket, and Mark's like, hand out of the pocket, easy and slow. And you pull it out, and that's where we see that the above the fold on his first, on his index finger, on his pinky finger, was cut off. He did that to shame him. And Kazul lets Mark know that Dumas has his family as hostages. They've killed Kazul's father, and Dumas is now in charge of the joint. And like here on page 10, he leaves a message with Oracle, just in case something happens to him. Oracle can forward this message to Kandri. And Oracle's like, data received, starting with phrase, in case of death. I just hope I won't have to relay this to Kandri. He's like, neither do I, Oracle. Shaw off. Oracle off, logs off. Again, I like that. Again, I love Oracle, so I love any time that Oracle shows up in here. And then we get to, as they're flying to Japan, we get some backstory from Mark about how Dumas' amputation of Kazuo's joint meant that Kazuo had lost face with the Dachuchi Duku. Again, Japanese, I'm not going to say they've got some weird customs, but as Ralph Garman over on the Hollywood Babylon says, seriously, Japan? What the? And then as the story continues, we get some more Japanese stuff going on here. Again, it's very interesting. Again, I don't know how much this is true, how much this is still true, how much this has changed. But you can tell that apparently John Ostringer has quite a bit of or at least to me it seems he has a fondness for Japan and Japan culture. And this we get in the synopsis where I talked about how Kazul shows up and tells Dumas that Mark's coming for him, and Dumas is like, excellent, tell him I am waiting. If he wishes a formal duel, the arrangements pass through Ryu's hand. And speaking of which, Ryu's bringing some tea to our captives, Mark's family. And they're like, Mark's brother's like, Mark's brother says, I suppose you wouldn't know anything about my brother. And Ryu's like, perhaps you should consult your tea leaves. And he pulls up one of the cups, and underneath this little miniature Manhunter mask, it looks like. It's kind of in shadows. But you can tell it's kind of a mask or a ring or what it is. But I think it might have been a little better if it was a little clearer, if it wasn't quite so shady. But again, it's got a cup over it, so it looks accurate. It's a little hard to see exactly what it is. Or maybe it's because I'm getting old and going blind, one of the two. And then as Ryu leaves, he pulls a knife out and stabs one of the guard at the door, it looks like. It didn't really show, but as Ryu closes the door, the guy at the door says, "Good night, Ryu." "Ryu, I trust everything is fine." He's like, all is well, farewell. He pulls a knife out and the guy's bent over, so it looks like he maybe stabbed him. It's a little unclear there. I wish that was a little clearer. And then we see Anwoka then here on the next page. So I guess it is clear. Here on page 13, we see Ryu with a bloody knife dragging the guy out. Next thing we see, Manhunter come walking in the door. And they slide him a note. And it says, "Trust the man who brought you tea. Arrangements have been made. Love, Mark." And then Ryu opens the door. And I like, because they're like, who is it? His sister. I think it's his sister. One was like, "Is he coming for us? Where is he, Elliot?" And Ryu opens the door. "Hunting. Ryu, he draws Dumas away from you. Come quickly. Your shoes are outside. There's not much time." And then we get Manhunter approaching the corridor. We get his thought balloons. And this works better than in comic book form than it would in live action or in animation or whatever, because there you would hear their voice and you could tell the difference. Because as I already talked about in the synopsis, this is actually, we find out later in a few pages, this is actually Kazoo. The great Kazoo. Oh, sorry. This is Kazoo. But we get to stop. He's like, "No one around. Come here, Dumas. Wait, that subtle whistle in the air. Daggers?" And again, we get a little fight here between the two men. And Ryu, for not being Manhunter, he does a pretty good job. Again, I do like here on the bottom of page 16 where they're fighting the last third of the page. We get Dumas and Manhunter doing a little fighting. Dumas slashes under Manhunter. Manhunter kicks him in the face. And on the left and right side of the page, we have like a surprint of Dumas's face and the Manhunter mask. I like the way this page is laid out. It's very nice. And again, like there's just a couple pages of them fighting. And Manhunter hits Dumas and Dumas like, "Why do you hesitate, Mark Shaw? Do you lack resolve to kill?" And as Manhunter blasts his baton, Dumas goes flying. He walks up on Dumas. Dumas kicks him, knocks him down. And let me see here real quick. Looking on page 19, again, Dumas picks up his sword. He's like, "My sword is tainted. It has touched an unworthy object. It's laid on the ground. However, it will suffice for the deed at hand. As I promised, Manhunter." And Manhunter's like, "Promise denied." And like here on page 19, the last bottom half, two-thirds. I guess it's half. Dumas raises a sword and brings it down on Manhunter. And Manhunter blocks it with the baton. And then pops away. He's like, he's off balance. And as he jumps up, Dumas brings the sword and slices right through Mark's gut. Or, I'm sorry, Manhunter's gut. "I grant your death wish." And Manhunter goes rolling. And he's like, "A minute can flow as a year. Lord, grant me that minute." And he kind of stumbles away. And Dumas follows him, blood trail apparently. And he's like, "Coward, my sword drinks your blood, Shaw. Soon it shall drink your family's blood as well." And on the bridge, Manhunter's like, "Your blade errs, sir. Look beneath the mask." And he pulls off the mask and we see, and it says, you know, Keiji Musuka. I'm probably mispronouncing that. Keiji Mushua, which is Shadow Warrior in Japanese. And Kazoo tells him that he's a decoy. It's his right to fight him. Shaw's family is rescued. All the Kubun are loyal to him. They're dead. The Hazawagi estate destroyed. Command of Kazoo Hazawagi true. Mark's unbound girl Ninjo will defeat you. A little disjointed what he's talking about there. But yeah, so again, the only problem, just looking back on, and again, yeah, the only problem I have with this, and maybe I'm answering my own question. I'm wondering if the Manhunter's mask has a voice modulator in it. Otherwise, he should be able to recognize that this isn't Mark Shaw's voice, this is Ryu, someone he's been dealing with. So, unless, like I say, maybe he does have a voice modulator, I don't think I've ever heard it mentioned. I'm going to have to look at that further and see. Because yeah, that's the only real problem with it, is if there's not a voice modulator, he should be able to tell who it is. And then here on the last page, the building blows up behind him, kaboom, a big explosion. And then we get the cover here shown at the very end. Again, not exactly like, there's an inset of the building exploding, which I really love. But then below that, again, this page is a little darker, more in shadows. But we get Doom is holding up the mask. He's breaking the mask here. He's like, "For this, you shall pay dearly for this night, Shaw. I swear by the assassin's knife, you will die next, face of steel." And we get Ryu, I believe that's Ryu, holding Kazuzu's body in the Manhunter costume. Again, this is almost like the cover. We get, like I say, they're swapped on the other side, and we on the cover we can't see Ryu's face. But again, this last page here, page 22 of this, is just a fantastic page. It's almost poster-worthy, in my opinion. I love the subtle art, in the fire in the background, the shadows it gives off from the ground, and the way that the fire is in the background, it's night, so again, the stuff more closer to us is more in shadow since the light's behind it. It's just a fantastic job. Again, I love the art on this. I love the writing. Manhunter's a great book. As I've said, unfortunately, this is the last story arc for Manhunter. So that's sad news, but oh, we still got a couple issues to go. Anyways, I'm going to go ahead and take a break here. Let's play some promos. What do you guys think about the storyline? Like I said, I'm loving it. I enjoy the Mark Shaw Manhunter book. I enjoy the, like I said, the art, the dialogue, everything's awesome. So, let's go take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Booster? Hey, bro. Gah! Bats! Booster! Together! Wow, well, this is great. This is just awesome.
You never said you and Booster were friends.
It never came up.
A consummate professional like you, friends with a dilettante like Booster?
You're both my friends, okay? You're more of a work friend, and Booster is more of a fun friend.
What's more fun than fighting crime?
Ooh, he's got you there.
Hi, this is FKA Jason's son again. I just wanted to take another minute of your time to tell you about his podcast, Silver and Gold. He and his buddy Roy Charlemagne Clary celebrate the DC Comics characters Booster Gold and Captain Atom, issue by issue, and blah, 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 blah. Listen, the real reason you want to listen to the Silver and Gold is their Throwback Thursday episodes, because I'm the star of those shows. Dad and I review the Silver Age Captain Atom stories published by Charlton Comics in the 1960s. You can find the Silver and Gold podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. You can also follow Dad Splitting Atom's blog at CaptainAtomBlog.com. We all know the real reason you'll be tuning in is to hear me criticize, celebrate the Silver Age Captain Atom in our Throwback Thursday episodes. I can't believe Dad roped me into this.
Silver and gold, everyone's searching for silver and gold. If you're alone, when you grow old, you'll never find comfort in silver and gold.
Hey, Gene, we should do a podcast.
Sounds like a great idea, Jeff, but what will we talk about?
How about a superhero that we both love?
Perfect. Someone like Thor or Captain America?
Both great choices, but I think they're being covered by somebody else already.
Wait, I've got it. What about the Protector of the Universe?
Like Voltron?
No. The guy with the jewelry that lets him create whatever he wants.
Ah, Green Lantern, nice.
Close. No, this guy has cosmic awareness.
Captain Marvel?
Almost. I mean, Quasar!
Ah, Quasar. Who doesn't love a good Quasar?
Tune in to the Quantum Cast, covering all things Quasar.
Yes, that's right. You can find us at quantumbands.blogspot.com.
And on the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network.
Yeah, that didn't sound scripted at all, did it?
Hi, John.
Hi, Maggie.
I'm still wrapping my brain around the fact that we're married.
Me too, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Aw.
Oh, hey, I was looking at these old comics and I noticed that there's
Hold
a parallel.
Hold that thought. Why don't we talk about it on our podcast?
We have a podcast?
It seems like the logical next step. We get married, we change our names, we combine our comic collections, we start a podcast about comic books.
Well, I can't fault your logic, but there are plenty of podcasts out there already. Do you really think we'll have anything new and interesting to say?
Oh, I think we'll manage. Welcome to the Married with Comics podcast, where we constantly f*** up.
She goes from Marvel Girl to Phoenix to Marvel Girl to Jean Grey to Phoenix to dead.
And then apparently he's so consumed with his own thoughts that he runs right past three monkeys. A brainwave camera took a picture of that guy's head. Brainwave camera.
And Ben's just basically, whatever you gotta do to stop the commies, Nick.
So join us at the Married with Comics podcast. We're two newlyweds with a love for comics intelligently, critically, and thoughtfully discuss comic books.
Also listen as we goof around, make jokes, and make fun of John for mispronouncing names.
I do that a lot.
Sometimes we'll pick a topic and review and discuss comics that relate to the topic.
And sometimes we'll pick up a comic and see what discussion topics come up. And sometimes we'll spend an entire episode talking about how much Maggie loves Batman.
The only thing that's almost as strong as my love for you is my love for Batman.
The Married with Comics podcast. Available directly on our site at marriedwcomics.libsyn.com, on iTunes, and wherever good podcasts are found. Also, check us out at Facebook at the Married with Comics podcast.
We've got everything you need.
Welcome back.
Now to move on to our next book. We're looking at Starman number 16. And before we continue or go to this story, again, I try to get these recorded a little bit earlier so I get these podcasts out in a timely fashion. Pull back the curtain a little bit. I'm actually recording this the end of September. And just this week, Justice League number, I believe it was Justice League number 8, just hit the stands. And in that book, apparently, our buddy Starman reappears. I haven't picked it up yet. I haven't been to the comic shop lately. But I need to call them and see if I can reserve a copy of that. But yeah, our buddy Will Payton Starman returns. It looks like he's in the black costume. We'll see later on in the book. He's got gray hair, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't read it yet, so I'm not sure how big of a role he has. But I posted on our Facebook page. As I said there, the godfather of our show, one of the godfathers of our show, the Irredeemable Shag. Someone posted on his wall, and he tagged me in it, so I shared it on our Starman Manhunter HR Facebook page. But this is a CBR.com link there where James Tynion IV talks about Starman's impact on the Justice League. And again, I'm not going to do a letter column section this time, but there is a comment here from Frank Bullen, who commented on it. He's like, I really hope he sticks around. Gray hair, though. And Will was a redhead? And I thought, I'm not sure I felt the gray hair. And again, my color, I'm a little colorblind. It was either a dark red or a light brown. I'm not quite sure what color his hair actually was back in the day. I'm slightly colorblind, so some of those colors kind of throw me off. And then also earlier in the month, August the 31st, it looks like, it was actually a while back, a month ago, I re-shared a link on here from a buddy of ours, Lawrence Lee, for the Unite DC Comics Project, posted a link on from Newsarama where it says that Scott Snyder reveals why he's bringing back Starman. And again, Frank Bullen, thanks, Frank. He called me, he's like, beat me to it. Yay! So I appreciate Frank very much for commenting on the Facebook page. I appreciate it. I love hearing from people. And also, while I'm talking about the Facebook page, just on episode 18, when I posted that, I mentioned about the Quantum Cast that Gene Hendricks does. And I said, I wasn't sure if he was still doing it. And he posted a comment on here saying, well, to answer your wondering if we're still doing the Quantum Cast, he posted a picture of Bugs Bunny saying, could be. They have released a newer episode since then, so great, check that out. But I guess that's enough looking at the Facebook page. Let's go ahead and get back to what we're here for, to talk about Starman. So this month, we're looking at Starman number 16. Cover date was November of 1989, but again, as we've been talking about, on sale date was September the 26th of 1989. This cost $1. The title of this was Father Calls Me William. Writer was Roger Stern, penciled Tom Lyle, inker Scott Hanna, letter Robert M. Pianana, colorist Carl Gafford, and editor was still Brian Michael Augustin. And the cover was done by Tom Lyle. And the synopsis, again, the credits and synopsis comes from Mike's Amazing World of Comics. The synopsis, after seeing an article in the newspaper, Starman flies off to San Francisco to visit his father in the hospital. Will hasn't seen his father in 20 years and has no proof of their relationship. He's denied access to see his dad. So Will assumes the identity of the doctor to get into the room and speak with his father, who is in a coma. Raymond Denning then awakens from his coma. Will is unable to reach the rest of his family by phone, but Jane and her mother are already on the way. After the doctors check on Raymond, Will is allowed to speak with him. He wonders why his father left. Raymond tells him that he found $50, then got on a bus. He wanted freedom from his family, but he never used that freedom wisely. Will is angry. He denies being like his father and reveals his secret identity. Jane then arrives moments before Raymond's body gives out. He issues an apology before dying. So now let's go ahead and talk about the actual issue itself. And we will start with the cover, as I normally do. The cover, we get the front of the page, we get Will, and who we'll find out is his father. His father's in bed, in a hospital bed. His arm's bandaged up, it looks like. Or maybe just tape holding, actually, I guess it's just tape holding the IV in. He's got a tube going up, one of those things up to his nose, so he can help him breathe. Will's got his head in his hands, kind of leaning on the bed rail. Behind him, we got a black background with a picture of Starman, kind of like a serpent, like a bluish coloring with a black outline. It says Father's Day. It's a very melancholy cover, very, very sad looking cover. All black on it kind of helps it. And then I say we get Will kind of, you know, looking down, depressed, and his dad dying apparently. It's a great cover. I do like this cover. Again, I wouldn't want to see covers like this all the time, but for this story, this cover is very fitting. It's very appropriate. It's a very nice cover. And then we start our story out. We get Will flying across some mountain ranges or hills, whatever. Get the title, Father Calls Me William. And we get some hikers hiking up the trail. Huh? What's that? It's one of those superheroes, Sunman or something. I give him peace and quiet. That bleep is a bigger nuisance than the dirt bikers. He's not afraid to get somewhere. And again, Will saying how he wished he could have got through his mom or his sister. There was no answer at home. But he couldn't wait around. He had to find out what's going on. And I do like how he's flying through the mountains and we get these hikers, seeing how our story started out 16 issues ago with Will being a hiker and waking up in the mountains himself with the power. So I'm sure it's not necessarily a reference to that, it's just him flying. I do like the maybe unintentional parallel. I don't really like parallel, maybe it's the wrong word, but I just like the way the line lines up. That he's flying through these mountains and we got some hikers, and that could have been him a year and a half ago. And he said he didn't want to leave a message at home. Again, we get some exposition. He's like, yeah, all right. When we say, Mom, Jane, bad news. Dad's in a coma, San Francisco. Dad's in a coma in San Francisco. And he's basically the first couple pages, Will thinking about his dad, you know, his dad looking old, how he was only 19 when he was born, so he's only in his mid-40s now. He looks much older. He's like, he's barely 19 when I was born, so he's only in his mid-40s. But Grandpa looked better than when he died at 70. Dargo said he'd been homeless for years. And we get to San Francisco. And again, Will lands and changes. And like here on the top of page 3, as Will's changing back from Will from Starman to Will, he's like, I wonder why I even bothered to fly here in costume. I could just shave my face, maybe my shirt. Maybe I'm used to being Starman. It's like how he's thinking about how being Starman's affecting his life and his thinking. And so he goes to the hospital, and as I talked about in the synopsis, he's there to see his father, Raymond Denning. He's in intensive care. He's not allowed any visitors. And she tells him that he's his son. But again, he has no proof of this. And apparently, several people's turned up, claim to be relatives of Mr. Denning. The last guy was an agent angling for a movie of the story. Movie of the Week story. And the doctor, we find out, is leaving at this time, and he goes up and talks to Will. He's on the form of emergency surgery on him. And again, they have a little talk back and forth. And Will's like, well, can I have my mom fax a copy of my birth certificate? Would that help? I wouldn't hurt. Because again, he's telling me he's talked to patient liaison to make sure that Will's actually his father. Or that Raymond Denning's actually his father. That, you know, they've got to be very careful. They can't, for privacy issues, they can't just let the information out to anybody. And so again, we get over to New Mexico, where Jane and her mom sit there talking. Jane points out on the TV about apparently this guy named Raymond Deming was in the hospital, and she's like, "That's Dave. Is that my father?" And then we get a page of flashbacks where we see that apparently Raymond's had problems keeping jobs, and he always seems angry, always blaming others for his inability to keep a job. And they show one day him going out, saying he's going out for cigarettes. And I like this here at the bottom of page 6. There's a scene from the past. You can tell by the bubble around the panel. We see Will's mom looking down at the ground, her depressed, you know, sad that she's arguing with her husband, that how, you know, sorry is always the answer for everything, and how she wished she would do something right for a change. And he's walking out the door saying, "Well, sure, I'm going out for cigarettes." And the next panel next to it, it's got almost the same image of her. I mean, she's got different clothes. She's older. But she's in that same posture, kind of looking down as she thinks, you know, that Ray never came back and how she wishes he was dead 100 times back then. So, again, speaking from personal experience, my real dad left when I was really born, so I don't have any memories of him leaving. And then I had a stepdad that was a bit of a jerk off, so I could not, growing up, I wish he would have left, just because, you know, arguments and other things I won't get into here. But so I can kind of see, you know, a little bit about where, you know, Will and Jane's childhood's coming from. The arguments, and again, a missing parent, so I kind of feel for Will and Jane in this instance, because I know they feel. Seeing your dad on the news after not having seen him since you were a little kid can be quite shocking. Again, I've had that experience, but because, again, I never even saw my dad. There's maybe a picture or two when I was a baby, but I don't remember him from anything. So if I was to see him, I wouldn't know him. But Jane's mom confirms that, yeah, that is his dad, or that is their dad. He hasn't aged well. And their mom's upset that, you know, how he never said goodbye, he just left, so why should she care? And then the phone rings, and it's Carol, that hot blonde that's got a thing for Will, that Will's kind of ignoring because of being Starman. And apparently, Jane tells her what's going on. She's like, you know, this is in the conversation, we hear, you know, hello? Oh, hi, Carol, yes, I'm all right. Well, no, I'm not all right. Are you sure you want to know? So apparently she's going to load it on her friend about what's going on, that's what friends are there for. And again, in the background, we see Jane's mom, you know, she's like, 20 years, Ray, 20 years, you're still turning our lives inside out. Like, she may be crying. She's very upset that, you know, again, her ex-husband that left the kids when they were younglings is coming back to disturb. And again, I do have experience with that as far as exes coming back. I think I've talked about it before. I do have an ex-wife. She left when my boys were real little, 2 and 3, I believe it was. And she was out of their life for years. And she, after 15 years, she came back in and started talking to the boys and told my middle son, Steve, a bunch of lies. And Steve started to get closer again, and she disappointed him again. So it kind of hurt him. So I understand completely how Jane's mom's feeling right here. It's hard to see your kids hurt by somebody, especially someone that's supposed to care about them. So I can definitely feel and understand the pain going through the family right now. That, I mean, it's hard to deal with. So I understand where they're all coming from. I can understand Jane's mom not wanting to deal with her ex-husband because of what she's done. But I could also understand where Jane's coming from, wanting to see and know and find out why their father left and get some closure on that angle. So I can definitely see where everyone in the family's coming from. They're all from different positions, and they're all equally right for their feelings and to be hurt and be feeling the way they are. So, and then we come back to the hospital, and we get Will again, a superhero. He's got powers, so he decides to use these powers. He sees the doctor's lounge. He goes in, steals a lab coat, pets over his clothes. He sees a picture of the doctor, an Asian guy, so he morphs his face to look like the doctor. And he goes, picks up a file, and he goes walking down the hall. And this wonder's like, "Goodness, doctor, that was a quick lunch." He's like, "Uh-huh." Because, again, he can change his face, but I don't know if he can change his voice. So he's probably trying to keep it mum. And then he's got another nurse. "Similar change in Mr. Dang's condition, Dr. Yee." He's like, "Oh, thank you." So I guess Magic's trying to keep his voice down a little bit and not talk very much. People don't recognize that he isn't Dr. Yi. And then again, he goes in there and talks to his dad quietly, telling, you know, life's been busy. He writes about how he saved the boy. And then we get some flashbacks from Will's point of view, how he's playing horsey with his dad and him laying there on the couch while his parents are yelling in the background, you know. And his dad's like, why can't you keep these kids quiet? And he's like, stop, stop, please stop. And again, having grown up in the house that I grew up in, I'm very familiar with how Will's feeling right there. And the police is talking to Will's mom, saying, well, don't worry, I'm sure he'll turn up. And Will's thinking, you know, dad's gone and it's all his fault. So again, he's blaming himself for his dad leaving. Again, as I talked about, I did have a dad that left, but he left when I was a baby, so I never really experienced that. I never really went through that whole drama or the guilt of blaming myself. But I can understand how that can affect a young kid and how things that happen when you're kids can affect you as an adult. So I definitely understand where Will's coming from. And then we come back to Carol and Jane talking on the phone. Carol saying that she's willing to do whatever she can to help out. She's going for the house, give him a ride. And Jane's like, thanks, Carol. I think I can drive. And usually the kid's the neighbor, but I just need to talk this out with somebody. Her mom doesn't want to go. She don't know if she's trying to talk her into it. And now she wishes her brother was there. And about this point, her mom shows up with her bags packed. And like, oh, let's go. And so, Carol, I think it's going to work out. Thanks for caring. So it's good to have a friend that you can talk to about these kind of issues, you know, things that are bugging you or things that, you know, life-changing events like your dad showing up after 20 years. It's good to have someone you can talk about and get other thoughts and someone that can understand and be there for you. And then we come back to San Francisco, where Dr. Lee pulls back the curtain. We see Will sitting there. And Raymond, Will's dad, wakes up and tells the doctor that it is his son. And we get a little backstory here about how he was hungry. The Salvation Army gives good lunches, so he's heading there. We saw a boy right on the street, so we pushed the boy all the way. He got hit by a car, and he asked, you know, if the boy's okay. Yeah, the boy's fine. They tell, you know, Raymond that they're going to talk to his son for a few minutes. And the doctor pulls William to his office, has a little talk, explains what happened, that he's had a lot of massive trauma, internal injuries, and how he's had years of tobacco and alcohol abuse taking their toll on his heart and liver, so he's not very optimistic. Will tells him, you know, do what you can for him, but don't prolong his death. And then so Will goes back and talks to his dad, and again, his dad, you know, I'm sorry, Will catches up his dad with what's happened with him and his sister, what's going on, the family, and she's not sure, you know, he says he doesn't know how his mom already did it, how she, you know, she enjoys her job, she's, you know, done a lot of hard work to try to make for the family, being alone. And Will finally asks the question, you know, why did you leave us? And he's like, yeah, you don't want to hear this story from me. And he's like, yeah, just tell me it's important. So basically he talks about how he went out to get some cigarettes. And as he was on the walk in the streets, he found a $50 bill. You figure this came out in 1989. So 20 years before that'd be 69. The year I was born. So he found a $50 bill on the ground. And again, 50 bucks back in 1969 for someone out of work. He said, I could hold him over until his next job. Both the kids were sick. His wife was mad at him. But he used that 50 bucks to do some good for the family. And all of a sudden, a bus pulled up, and he's like, you know what? Let's kind of get some freedom. So he got on the bus and rode away out of their lives. And as I mentioned, Will's dad looks quite a bit like Will in here, looking at these pages. Yeah, again, I know it's drawings, so they can draw however they want, but they did a good job in making Will and his dad look alike when his dad was younger. There is a strong resemblance between Will and his dad. And Will kind of gets upset, thinking about how his mom had to work hard, they had to stay with friends and family. Looks like right after he left, they moved in with her mom, Will's grandma, and they moved to a trailer park. So, you know, his mom had to work crappy jobs, take care of two kids by herself. And again, Will's thinking how, you know, the one thought that haunted him was that, you know, it was his fault because he was sick. He could never, you know, shake that feeling. That's why his dad left. So Will got a job to help out the family income. and his mom was able to save enough to buy their own house. So Will's thinking all this about, you know, the last 20 years, how because of his dad taking that $50, hopping a bus and skipping town, made his mom's life really hard for quite a while. And again, he finally just unloads on his dad how, you know, you did what you did to us for years. I blame myself for you leaving. Mom had to work 2 or 3 jobs at a time. I worked, Jane worked. We all had to, you know, because you found $50, got on a bus. And I'm sorry, just what happened? Let's not talk anymore. What do you do? I've done a lot of things. I've been on the road. I work construction. I managed a rock band for a while. He's like, oh, William Park, pick a job and stick with it. Don't be a drifter like your old man. And at that point, Will finally loses. Like you, I'll never be like you. He's like, I held on the advertising job I hated. So just Jane went to borrow money for college. And he's like, shut up, I haven't drifted. I've worked my way across the country. You come with people, see what I've been through. He's like, how would you like to lose a month of your life and wake up a star man? And he shifts to the star man, reveals the secret identity to his dad. And he also morphs his face to look like the doctor. Tells his dad, you know, how he's lifted a crane off of a construction worker. He's afraid that he's going to screw up and hurt somebody. But he said he never wants to hurt anyone like the way his dad did by leaving the family. He's like, you know what? He's like, but I'll never hurt anyone the way you did. You know why? Because I'll never be a father. I'm not a human anymore. Son, I didn't mean. He's like, no, you never meant anything. You never meant to hurt us, but you did. Take a good name, morphs himself into his dad's face. Like, take a good look at yourself, Deming. This is the face that caused much pain. Yeah, I can make myself look like you too, but I'll never be like you, never. His dad kind of coughs up a little bit. He's like, yeah, you're right. I just had to last the best my lungs will let me. Well, you weren't, you're not like me at all. I just hope my kids would turn out better than I did, William. You sure picked a hell of a way to do it. And I go, I didn't pick a dad, it was an accident. Accidents happen. And so after him blowing up his dad, he kind of works it out. And he gets that anger out at his dad for, you know, again, his dad abandoning him for all those years. And again, I can't say as I blame him. I mean, if it was one thing, if an emergency came up or if something, you know, but just to find $50 and hop on a bus and leave. No word to the family. The family doesn't know if you're dead or alive. I can't blame Will for his anger. Just trying to think, you know, how I would be if I was in his position. I mean, his mom worked hard. Him and his sister had to work hard just because his dad hopped the bus to get out of town. It's very, oh, he's talking thinking about, you know, that can mess a person up inside having to deal with all that because their father left, no word. And again, as I said, with an abusive father, I don't know which is worse, the father leaving or having an abusive father. Both are sucky. But so I can definitely feel where Will's coming from here. But they kind of make up about it. About this time, Jane gets there and comes in and he gets to say hi. He gets to see Jane. He's like, tell your mother I'm sorry. He was glad that he got a chance to see his kids before he died. And the nurse pulls him out as the doctors come in. His mom shows up about this time. Even though his mom didn't get to say anything to him, she does, you know, so he dies. The doctor comes, I'm sorry, with all his injuries, I'm very sorry. And she's like thinking, goodbye, Ray, I'm sorry too. And Will says he tries calling, but the line was busy. And Jane tells his mom, you know, just before the doctors arrive, he said, tell you something. And she's like, I heard him. It doesn't change anything he did, but this time, I think he really meant it. And again, at the very end, there's a quote here. It says, death is always and under all circumstances a tragedy. For if it is not, then it means that life itself has become one. By Theodore Roosevelt. It's a very nice quote. Very meaningful. Again, this is, I love this issue. I love this series. I've been saying all along. This issue was a little more heartfelt, a little more clutching at the heartstrings. You know, you got the absentee dad returning. You got Will. Mainly, you get a little bit from Jane and her mom, but mainly you get Will's thoughts and feelings and just Will's, I'm not sure the right word there, but it makes you stop and think. And like I say, it does pull at the heartstrings, and it's a very sentimental issue. I really love this issue. It's very thought-provoking. Roger Stern did a great job on this issue. I am not going to take a break, I don't think. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next segments. This is the Cop Comics Comic Rack. Again, these are books that were on sale according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics from September of 1989. So we're going to take a look at these. There's the NAM number 38. Again, I think I read the first couple issues of the NAM, but it wasn't really much up to what I wanted. But I know that Tom Panarese. Yeah, Tom Panarese. I talked with him on my Head Speaks podcast here not too long ago. He does a podcast on the NAM. It's Action Comics 646. This is Superman. He's back on Earth. I'm just looking at seeing who was in this one. This looks like he's dealing with the Eradicator and some creature from that's been on Earth for quite a while. I don't really vaguely remember it, but I don't remember much about it. Dungeons & Dragons number 11. I picked up my first issue or two of that because I liked Dungeons & Dragons as a kid. Adventures of Superman 460. This was, again, Superman in the Fortress Solitude. He's having a fight with the Eradicator. Eradicator's starting to come into its own. For more on Superman, check out Mike Bailey and Jeffrey Taylor's From Crisis to Crisis Superman podcast. Moving on, there was Alpha Flight 78. I didn't pick that one up. I didn't really read Alpha Flight at the time. Amazing Spider-Man 326. This was Gravitron, I believe his name was, the villain. This was written by David Michelinie. Again, I was buying Spider-Man at this point. I'd started like a year or so before this. I enjoyed Spider-Man. Next one we read is talk about is Animal Man number 17. This was part of Grant Morrison's run. This was the last half dozen issues or so of Grant Morrison's run. Again, that Animal Man was a great book. I may cover that at some point over on Head Speaks or maybe a podcast. I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but I loved Animal Man, especially during Grant Morrison's run. There were some Archie comics, of course. Avengers 311. This was part of the Acts of Vengeance storyline. I was buying Avengers at this point. Acts of Vengeance, I think I talked about it last month. It's a crossover during a lot of the Marvel books where villains crossed and swapped their heroes. So if they'd fight one hero, they would go and fight another hero this month just to kind of throw heroes off and try to maybe that make a difference. Also this month, part of the Acts of Vengeance was Avengers Spotlight. This was basically a Hawkman team-up book. Hawkeye team-up book. This had Hawkeye and Iron Man teaming up. Also was Avengers West Coast number 52. I think I was buying Avengers West Coast by this point. This was dealing with Wanda and the Vision's children. They're two twin boys. We find out that they weren't really real. They were part of... they were some of Wanda's magic, creating magical children. And I think they were part of Mephisto's soul or something, if I'm not mistaken. Batman 441 came out this month. This was part of A Lonely Place of Dying. This was a good storyline. This was when... kind of looking back over Batman's life and Robin. And this is what leads up to Tim Drake becoming the third Robin. It was a great storyline. I know there's several buddies out there with podcasts. I know J. David Weider, I believe it is, has a Batman podcast. And, almost forgot. Chris Franklin and buddy Ryan Daly have a Nightcast where they're talking about this era of Batman. It's going to be a while before they get to this point, but that's a great podcast when they get it out. Check it out. Captain America 364. This was Captain America fighting Crossbones. I was buying Captain America at this time. I was buying a lot of these Marvel books. Captain Atom, number 34. This was Captain Atom fighting... let me see real quick. Dr. Spectro, it looks like. Again, I was buying Captain Atom at this time. For more on Captain Atom, check out the Silver and Gold podcast by our buddy of the show, Jay Jones, who I actually teamed up with over on another podcast, the DC Comics Presents show. We teamed up to talk about Captain Atom and Firestorm teaming up with Superman. So, great guy, great show. Check it out. Moving on from there, let me get back to my list here. Checkmate 22. Again, I've got a podcast. I won't go into that, but I've got a podcast, Task Force X, where I talk about Suicide Squad and Checkmate. Check that out. It's also on the network. Classic X-Men number 41. This was a reprint of the X-Men books. This was reprinting the part of the Dark Phoenix saga. Moving on from there, there was an issue of Count Dracula. I picked up an issue of Count Dracula. This was Count Dracula number 8. I picked up an issue or two. Interesting book. Damage Control number 1, part of the X-Vision storyline. This was a 4-issue miniseries. They actually made their appearance in the Spider-Man Homecoming movie. They kind of cleaned up after the heroes when they made a mess. Daredevil 274. This was written by Ann Nicoletti, who's supposed to be a good run. I think I was buying Daredevil at this time. I'm not sure when I started buying this book. I know I did buy Daredevil at some point. Again, J. David Weider has a Daredevil podcast. He's still doing it. Check it out. Or as he says, take the dare. Detective Comics 607 and 608. 607 was part of the Mud Pack storyline where they reinvented Clayface. And Detective 608 was an anarchy story. Again, check out Ryan Daly and Chris Franklin's Nightcast podcast. Moving on, Doctor Strange Supreme number 11. I think I was buying this one, part of the X-Avengers storyline. Don't remember much about it. Doom Patrol 27. This was when Grant Morrison had taken over. Earlier, Paul Kupperberg had written it. I love Paul Kupperberg's run on it. This one wasn't bad. This one started getting more weird and more crazy. For more on Doom Patrol, check out the Waiting for Doom podcast. Moving on from there, we also have, there was El Diablo number 3. I picked up this. This was a miniseries, a Western type, not a Western type, but a kind of like a Western type costume, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But it was a like a Southwest, same area that Starman take place in. Here, superhero, modern day. Excalibur number 16. This was a book, again, my friend Billy bought. This was part of the Cross Time Caper. I enjoyed this. I read Billy's comics for a while on these. This was pretty good. Moving on, there was Fantastic Four 334, part of the X-Avengers storyline. This was written by Walter Simonson. I was buying, as I've said, buying Fantastic Four at this point. Great storyline, great book. Check it out. Firestorm the Nuclear Man, number 91. I love me some Firestorm, in case you haven't noticed that yet. I was buying Firestorm at this point, definitely. This was part of the, what was it called, Elemental War. This was part 204. This had Firestorm and Red Tornado, and I think a Swamp Thing, and the new Elemental Naida, whatever, her formation. I still think they should have used Typhoon for it, but at least we got another female out there, I guess. I don't know. But it was a good story. I enjoyed it. If we're on Firestorm, check out the Firestorm and Aquaman podcast. One of the ones that got me started in podcasting. And again, great podcast. They don't talk a whole lot of Firestorm and Aquaman right now. They're finding their joy elsewhere, but definitely check it out. I'm sure they'll get back to it at some point. The Flash number 32. This actually, I think this leads up, if I'm not mistaken, maybe. I think this leads up to the Flash 35, which I covered. Oh, yeah, I think it was last month. Excuse me, ahead of time, I forget where I'm at. Oh, yeah, I covered that one last month over here on this podcast. So definitely check out that book. G.I. Joe, Real American Hero number 94. This one here was part of the Snake Eyes trilogy, Warrior Reborn. Snake Eyes gets a new face. Again, written by Larry Hama. Great show. I love this show. Great comic. I love this comic. I do a podcast on it. G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast. Available on the network. Check it out. Green Arrow 25. I was buying Green Arrow at this time. This is written by Mike Grell. This cover has always facing in the background. A woman in front of a stone tablet. I don't remember offhand who this is. I don't remember if I was buying this or reading Billy's at this time. But Green Arrow, that was a good book. I enjoyed that. For more on Green Arrow, check out Warlord Worlds by friends of the show, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, a great couple doing a great podcast about the works of Mike Grell, Green Arrow being one of them. Also this month was Hawk and Dove number 6. This was their ongoing. This was a great series. I enjoyed it. I don't care what people say until DC ruined it by making Hawk. Never mind. If you want more on that, check out my Armageddon 2001 crossover over my Head Speaks podcast. I talk about Hawk and Dove over there a little bit. You'll find out. And I may cover Hawk and Dove at some point, some way. I'm not sure how I'm going to do it yet or where, but stay tuned for that. Huntress number 8. Also, I almost skipped Hellblazer 24. I wasn't reading Hellblazer at this point. It was on my radar. Eventually, for the next couple of years, I'd meet up with a guy, my buddy Scott Kessler, who was a big fan of Hellblazer. I'd read some of his books. Good series. Incredible Hulk 363. I was buying this one. In fact, this may have been one of my first issues of the Incredible Hulk. This was part of the X-Avengers storyline. This was the Gray Hulk, I believe. Yeah, Mr. Fix-It, fighting against the Gargoyle. Yeah, I think this may have been one of my first Hulk books I actually bought new. Iron Man 250, again, part of the X-Avengers storyline. Going on, there was Justice League America number 32, which was part of the Teasdale Imperative, guest starring the Justice League Europe. Speaking of Justice League Europe, this was also Justice League Europe number 7 out this month, part of the Teasdale Imperative. This had, I think this was the Gray Man. Yeah, the Gray Man. Dr. Fate was in here. For more on Justice League International, Justice League Europe, check out the Shag's Bwahaha, the JLI International podcast. It's a great show. Moving on, there was Legion 89, number 9. This, I believe, was the introduction of FaZe into the Legion. Again, I loved Legion. I thought it was a great book. Was it FaZe? Sorry, I'm going back and looking real quick. Yeah, there's a woman who, she's not named in this book, but she comes known as FaZe. This ties into the Legion of Superheroes. I don't know if I want to spoil and go into much detail on it here, but this had a big crossover without having a big crossover with the Legion of Superheroes book at the time. If you guys want to know more about this, let me know and either email me or leave a note on the Facebook page or the blog. And if you guys want, I can go into more detail about this if you guys want to hear about it. I won't go into a whole lot of detail, but I'll go into it briefly if you guys want. Legion of Superheroes number one. This is a revamp. This was the 5 years later era. They canceled Legion of Superheroes. And this was being written by Keith Giffen, who kind of, and all it was, Keith Giffen was the plotter and penciler, and Marion Tom Beerbaum was the scripter for this book. This, the jump to Legion of Superheroes 5 years in the future, was a darker, more grittier time. Not as much on code names, but by the real names. It was an interesting book. I started picking this up at some point and enjoyed it. Manhunter number 19, which we talked about this month. Mark Spector Moon Knight number 8. That was a good book. Marvel Age 82 is kind of a what's going on in the Marvel Universe. Let's see what else there was. Marvel Mighty Thor number 411, which was part of the Axe of Vengeance storyline. Looks like the Juggernaut's fighting Thor. Mr. Miracle number 10 with Maxi-Man versus Miracle Man, or Mr. Miracle. That was a good book. I really enjoyed that Mr. Miracle book. I think it was Maxi-Man. Yeah, Maxi-Man. That was a good book. I really enjoyed that. New Gods number 9. I bought that one. I'm not sure if I enjoyed it or not. It's been a while. New Mutants number 83. This was a book my friend Billy had bought. New Titans number 60. This was part of The Lonely Place of Dying that I talked about earlier. Great, great storyline. I can't say good enough things about this storyline. Nick Fury Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 5. I'm not sure if I was picking that one up or not. There was also Power of the Atom number 18, which I believe was that final issue. I will be covering Power of the Atom over on my Head Speaks podcast once I'm done with Armageddon 2001. Moving on from there, Power Pack 51. There's Predator number 4 from Dark Horse Comics. Punisher number 27. Punisher Magazine number 4. Punisher War Journal number 12. I don't think I picked up the magazine other than maybe the first issue, but I picked up the two other Punisher books. I just was enjoying Punisher at that point. Quasar number 4. Again, I talked about it last month briefly. I loved Quasar. Buddy of the show, Gene Hendricks and Adam Worth is doing a Quasar podcast that comes out periodically. They're still doing it. It recently came out, so I'm enjoying that podcast. Definitely check out Gene and Adam's podcast. Sensational She-Hulk number 9. Moving on from there, Silver Surfer 31. Spectacular Spider-Man 180. This was part of the Axe of Vengeance storyline. Spider-Man was getting more powerful as he went along. This time, and this was written by Jerry Conway, the writer of creator of Firestorm. At this point, Spider-Man's getting more and more powerful. And we find out either maybe this issue or next, with the next couple of issues, he's something happened and he's slowly gaining the, I forget the name now. There was a, Marvel has this cosmic being that imbues people with superpowers in a time of need. Something happened, and instead of getting all the powers at once, these powers were slowly come over the last couple of issues for Spider-Man. So it was a great storyline. I loved it. Spectre number 30. Again, I was buying that. I enjoyed that book. Moving on, Starman number 16. I think I've talked about that more recently. Just now. Suicide Squad number 34. This was Amanda Waller fighting Granny Goodness on Apocalypse, part of the Lashina / Duchess storyline. Again, for more on that, check out my Task Force X podcast. I'll be getting there at some point in the future. Superman 37. This one boasts Superman's ex-pal, Jimmy Olsen. This one here, Jimmy's being affected by the Eradicator device that Superman brought back from his exile storyline. It was causing Jimmy to undergo some weird transformations. Good story. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 25. I never bought this book, but this is what started the Turtles book, this book here. Then there was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Adventures number 7 by Archie Comics. This was based on the cartoon. This one here I did read a little bit more. Transformers number 60. I love the Transformers. Transformers is one of the books I started collecting early on when I started collecting comics. In fact, there is a new Transformers podcast out there. At this recording, they've only released one episode so far. It's from those yahoos over at the Longbox Crusade. And also with John Shaver Hames from over at the Married with Comics podcast. I'm really enjoying that. Let me see real quick. It is called, yes, Transformers Chronicles, The Marvel Years, episode one that's been released so far. It came out beginning of September. So that's a good, I'm definitely waiting to listen more to that podcast and hopefully be on there at some point in the future. But let's go ahead and move on with my show. So where were we? Transformers 60 I talked about. Uncanny X-Men 255. Again, I don't remember if I was reading this at this point or if I was reading Billy's, if I was buying it or if I was reading Billy's books. But it was X-Men. Uncanny X-Men Days of Future Past 1. This was a reprint book. I think I had this at one point. This reprinted the Days of Future Past storyline, written by Chris Claremont and drawn by John Byrne. Great storyline where this is kind of what the X-Men Days of Future Past movie is based on, sort of. The Unknown Soldier number 11, coming to the end of that run. Web of Spider-Man number 58. This was part of the Acts of Vengeance, if I'm not mistaken. No, it is not labeled as such. This was being written by Jerry Conway also. Looks like Spider-Man is facing down against the Grizzly. What If? This issue 7. This was What If Wolverine was Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. What If was a great book for the most part. There was some issues that weren't as good. Some was really good. Hit or miss. Overall, I enjoyed it, though. Wolverine number 18. Also, is Wolverine Saga number 4. There was a Wonder Woman number 36 out this month. Again, I was reading my friend Billy's books at this point, I still believe. X-Factor 48, Young All-Stars 31. But that's going to do it for those. Because again, there's other books. If you want to go to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, you can check them out and see what else came out this month. I didn't read everything, but those are the ones that either meant something to me or ones that I picked up. But that's going to do it for this month. I'm going to let you guys go. Go ahead and check out the other shows on my network. I've talked about it before. I'm not going into detail here with it. But if you like this show, send me some feedback. I love hearing from people. You can go on Twitter and on the Headcast Twitter feed. I don't have one directly for this, but we're on Facebook, I do. Or the website, starman-manhunter.headspeaks.com. Leave me a message on there. Send me an email to smah@headspeaks.com. Let me know what you guys think about any of the books I've talked about, what you think about them, anything about from the Cop Comics comic rack. I definitely love hearing from you guys. Leave me, rate me on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts from. Leave me a rating on there. I'd love to have a 5-star review from you guys, but whatever you guys want to give, I just like to hear from people. And I think that's going to do it for this time out. Definitely come back next month. Until then, Star Hunters, keep watching for the stars. Thank you for listening to another great episode of the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour. Please join us next month for another great, fantastic episode as we cover another issue of the Will Payton Starman series and the Mark Shaw Manhunter series. Keep in mind that these podcasts are not affiliated or endorsed by DC Comics. I'm just a fanboy who loves these comics and wants to spread these love with everyone else out there and just talk about them. Again, you can email us at smah@headspeaks.com. Or you can go to our blog, which is at starman-manhunter.headspeaks.com. You can also go to the Facebook page at facebook.com/starman-manhunter-adventure-hour. No spaces, all one word. But once again, thank you very much for joining us. Until next episode, this is Aaron Moss saying, see you in the funny pages.